we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyambi Tatyambi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyambi Tatyambi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyambi Tatyambi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, joy as a practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening, or even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day. There must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. even to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
A response inside of me that then kicks up a dialogue and kind of a debate going back and forth over physical hunger. Mm-hmm. And in resistance to asking for something that might help my body to feel better. Because the idea arises, oh, it would be nice if I had this. And then immediately something comes in and says, along the lines of, you're just being a baby, or think about people who don't have the resources, you know, to be able to give themselves, you know, this something. So therefore, you know, you should just suck it up and deal with it. Or it jumps in and says, this is good practice to do without and just, you know, see what happens there. And so there's this whole kind of continuum from sort of like being attacked on a character level, like I'm just being wimpy. And then using it as a spiritual practice, quote, right? Or comparing my situation to other people who can't get the kind of relief that I might could if I just asked for it. And so it's like this whole big thing. And I think what I'm looking at is what is true kindness, mm-hmm. and what is true compassion.
Yeah, and what do you see when you look at that, when you ask that question?
That's one of the things that causes the most doubt inside of me. That will be that area, which is why I'm bringing you that would say, you don't know.
Mm-hmm. So when you get, when the sensation, I'm assuming this, let me check it out, the sensations are first before the thought of what could assist?
Yeah, the experience, like how
so
I slept at night or something, right?
Okay.
Some discomfort.
Yeah, so there's some discomfort or some sensations that get called discomfort, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so then there arises something that would actually maybe help, and then that launches off into the conversation.
Right.
If you're being a wimp or you're being, but think of all those people and solidarity with them, you shouldn't have that or whatever, that. And then when you look to ask, so it sounds like then you go to a place of, well, what's truly kind that you do? You kind of put the conversation aside, is this so? And then you say, what's kind? That's what you've been. And what the answer you get is, you don't know. You don't know what's kind.
Well, I do know enough in to be able to ask for that whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and but then there's repercussions inside from that, you know, from taking the action on the behalf of comfort.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That it doesn't stop the conversation. You know, the debate.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the conversation debate is going to keep going. In fact, I don't know if you would see this as so, but what's occurring to me is that you don't know mm-hmm. what's kind is just a furthering of that conversation.
Right.
Yeah. So there does seem to be something to some action to take that the conversation is really, really, really trying to talk you out of doing or distract you from that. Mm-hmm. Is that so?
It could be, yeah. That would just be one more thing that it uses to stop me from doing the thing that might.
Yeah, because you do have an idea of the thing that might help. Mm-hmm. It's just not letting you take any action toward that.
Right, or if I do, then it comes up. And
which is another way of not letting you take action, right?
Yeah,
because if you do, you're going to get beaten up, or it's going to use it against you, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so as we're talking now, what is occurring to you?
A couple of things. One is that there's always asking. I can ask, and then maybe there's receiving, and maybe there's not. Mm-hmm. You know, I think in the receiving, then that sort of like puts an end to it, in that there's a way that I could probably be with myself, mm-hmm. you know, to give myself the compassion or the kindness or whatever in light of not getting, you know, the relief or
So there's an asking, there's a communication that's possible,
right?
That would open up some other possibilities, maybe?
Yeah.
So either you communicate that, hey, this would really help, could I, you know, have this or whatever, however that would look. And then who knows where it would go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Only conditioned mind that even is pretending to know, but nobody really knows where it would go from there.
Right. And okay, so I even see that there's the need for kindness either direction, because it really isn't the end of it if I get that, because it doesn't stop the conversation, like I said before.
So that initial impulse, that very initial, here's something that might help, that felt like in everything that you were saying, and I'm projecting, that felt like the kindness.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something that would help this person with this discomfort. And then conditioning jumps on that, tries to, you know, distract and make you wrong and all of that kind of stuff, when really all that might be the next step is to communicate about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the next step might appear. And then the next step. Meanwhile, this is all going on.
Yeah.
The condition, you know, all the conversation and all the everything.
Yeah, that which you're describing, the next thing is just straightforward, right? It's just that, and then there's a list of it goes on.
Yes,
around it, but you just keep going like this, and it'll keep doing this.
It will. And just out of habit, it's compelling. That's all. You know, that big show. You know, that big show of conditioning of this and that, and what if, and you're so, and all of that. But it's only habit that makes it compelling. It's not true, it's not valuable, it doesn't offer any, you know, insight, it doesn't do anything. It's just out of habit that we look at it. So it's just as, you know, what's valuable, and it's just as possible to just look at that straightforward thing as you're learning, you know, as you're pointing out. And see where that goes. Thank you.
I've been looking at what feels like a sort of broad version of that. And what has come up in a number of my recordings over the last, I would say even year, is I keep thinking of the Serenity Prayer, which I think is, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, the last one's the biggie. Clincher.
And I just over and over, I'm struck by how that has everything in it. Uh-huh. It really does. It feels like just an amazing little thing. Guideline, sort of a beacon. I was just looking at, I realize now as we're talking that I was looking at a version of it this morning where I just got back from Zambia. And this time of year in Zambia, the air quality is terrible because it's well before the rainy season, so it's very, 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 very dry. And people are burning, you name it, they're burning it. And so it's rough, you know. And I was very aware, I always am aware of that this time of year when I'm there. And like there would be times where it was just like, oh, I could feel it in my voice and that, you know. And I was talking to Teresa about it one day and she was saying, or not even specifically about it, it was just in the course of the conversation, it came up. She's like, yeah, sometimes if you wake up at like 3 a.m. in the morning, the air quality's good.
Huh.
And I was like, wow, imagine. That's just where you live.
Wow.
All the time.
Yeah.
There isn't any clean air, you know? So it's one of the things I really look forward to coming home.
So, if you're listening
on the recorder, or joining us in California, the air quality stinks.
Yeah.
And actually, it didn't stink when I first got home. I knew what was going on back here, but I guess, I don't know, I didn't realize that the winds were blowing in the right direction or whatever when I first got home, so I thought, oh, great, I missed it.
Yeah. Seems like every morning, the campfire, the smoke blows in or something.
So anyway, whatever it was a few days ago, when it started, it was just, I mean, in that last conversation what I was looking at is, that's one of those things where there isn't anything to do about it.
Yeah, that's the serenity part, isn't it?
Yeah.
Except the things.
There's no point in having any conversation about that.
Yeah.
Now, there's all kind, drink plenty of water and, whatever one can do to support the body in that. But there's no point in having any conversation about it.
Yeah. They're really, by bringing that up, I'm assuming kind of there is some conversation.
No, not really, actually.
Yeah. You're just saying that there's no point.
Yeah.
That it would.
It really just right away, it was like, wow, this is, here we are. This is one of those things where, in fact, actually, there was some gratitude that came with it because realizing this isn't the normal experience of the place in which I live. And I think partly because, when I first came home, the air was, at least in comparison to where I'd been, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Just like, wow, oh, it's clean and I can breathe deeply. And it just feels like, sometimes I feel like when I'm in Zambia, I'm like, sorry, body, I gotta breathe.
Yeah.
What am I ingesting?
Yeah.
But there's no way around it, obviously. So it just brought up kind of that gratitude that this is the way it is right now here, but it won't be. I mean, God, the resources that are being brought to bear on getting those fires in check is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, and actually, on some kind of really profound, deep level, we don't know that it won't always be. Mm-hmm. We don't know. We don't know what could happen. And so what you're describing is the path of ending suffering, really. That whatever it is that we are experiencing, we're bringing compassion to it. Whether it's, sorry body, I have to breathe. I have, I'm sorry. Or it's
a lot better than the alternative.
Yeah. Or hang on, it'll get better. Whatever is there, we can bring compassion. And that serenity prayer does sort of kind of wrap it up, doesn't it? Because there's a time for acceptance, there's a time for action, you know, and kind of switching things around or doing kind of communicating what we were just talking about. And then, you know, that's really the practice, is no kind of discerning the difference.
And it feels like there's a real invitation in it to stay awake, mm-hmm. you know, because it's not, it's like, just like was being talked about in the asking, it's not like the asking or not asking or not getting is all immaterial to the being present to the process.
Yeah.
And just that, just, I don't know, staying awake. Because in one instance, the thing might be to reach for the whatever to be more comfortable. In another instance, it's not.
Yeah.
And we have to stay awake to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that invitation to stay awake, what's dropping it for me is it's the difference between a content-focused life and a process-focused life.
Yeah.
Looking at how resistance causes me suffering. So I have been resisting the smoke a bit. I had this day yesterday. I haven't had what I would consider that kind of like bad day, in quotes. Mm-hmm. And it started with waking up in the morning and looking out the window and believing a story. And my story was soccer will be canceled.
Because of the smoke?
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I meditated, and it was asked of me, are you sure it's going to be canceled? Have you gotten an email? Uh-huh. No email, but you know, it's going to be canceled. You know, I was just completely believing my story, uh-huh. which of course then led to, I gotta get out the door, and then I'm mad at
whoever did that.
Yeah. Exactly. Forgetting that I could have just gone with what was on the schedule. Mm-hmm. Get up and meditate, take a shower, wake up the one that has to get up early, mm-hmm. eat, feed, everybody gets out the door. Mm-hmm. But it talked me out of it. It talked me into my story, mm-hmm. and then said that the thing that was causing me to suffer was the smoke.
Uh-huh.
And these coaches who'd made a poor decision.
Yeah.
Completely ignoring that... kids out on the field are fine.
Yeah.
But the thing talking to me, got me to believing, which is of course what it does, that the content is what's causing the suffering.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Completely taking me out of the sight that it's causing me the suffering.
Yeah.
That this smoky day is not new. The playing in the smoke is not new.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how it lulls me to. Because, you know, on Friday, they made the right choice. Don't send the kids outside, keep them inside until... But on Saturday, whoever they is, made the wrong choice. Completely just forgetting that my job is, as you guys were just talking about, is to be really present.
Yeah.
To not get into right and wrong choices and just the suffering, man. It was brutal.
Yeah.
It was brutal because it really went on until about 1 o'clock, which, you know, when it's 7:15 and you're getting out the door, that seems long.
Yeah, that's 5 hours of suffering. So the getting lulled into the story and having that leisurely kind of quote, you know, morning mm-hmm. of doing other things rather than what's on the schedule, that wasn't really where the suffering was. The suffering happened when it occurred to you, no, soccer's happening, and we got to go. Yeah.
No, well, for me, the story, if I had just said, oh, soccer's happening, and we have to go, and gone, that would have been fine. But I was caught in the story that I was right.
But what if you...
They shouldn't be having soccer.
Okay, so, yeah.
So I was caught in a belief about a reality that wasn't in existence.
Yeah, but it's what's striking me, and tell me if this is so, that even getting lulled into the story, as interesting as that is, how that happens, how we can just totally go with the story, it was when you realized that you had to get there, you were late, somebody made the wrong choice, because you opened it by saying, resistance is causing you to suffer, so I was kind of watching where the resistance was.
Well,
it seems like that. Is that right?
I don't know. I mean, if I had stayed awake and just paid attention and done what was on my schedule, I don't think I would have as easily been resisting what was.
Yeah.
So I think the story about another possibility is what drew me out of paying attention.
So the story was the resistance.
In this case,
to what was.
The story was the resistance. Well, it didn't have the same feel that resistance has, but yes, it was leading to the belief that there is another reality.
Yeah.
That I have some, well, the thing, the Serenity Prayer was what made it occur to me, like, I could have just accepted what was so, that I can't change, which is there's soccer. Now, the courage to change the things I could, I get to make a decision whether my daughter plays soccer in the smoke or not.
Right.
And I didn't even get to have that sort of prayerful moment because I had started believing a story that was false. So then when the reality came into play, there wasn't, I was so caught in the story, and then I'm like, we have to go, and this is, you know, I'm driving, this is, look at this smog, you know, how can they have you, you know, so I'm in the story. It never,
a different story now.
Well,
first
it's
it was
all the same story.
Then it was, what did I do?
But it's still a story for me.
Yes, but
like
it's all
the process of the story is still the same. Like the content of the story may have changed, but either way, it's out of my reality.
Yeah.
It's taking
either way,
me out.
Either way, you were in a story. You were living that whole
I was living the idea that there's an alternative reality to life.
Yeah.
And when I do that, it's miserable.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that I was doing that because I was so right about my story.
Yeah, you were really right about that story.
Yeah.
So when the reality, when what was actually so, an alternative to your story kind of hit you, that, oh no, we are having soccer, then that opened up for a whole new chapter of the story.
I'll go with a whole new chapter.
Yeah.
I think that what for me, it was still the same. I didn't move into, oh wait, this is what's next. All right, take a deep breath. What do we need to do? Shoes on, teeth brushed. I mean, I just start, you know, just the, it was the story. I was in the story.
And inside that story, there was no space or alternative.
There was no,
okay.
There was no awareness I was in the story.
Right.
I was in the story. I was like,
lost.
This is true. Can't people see? You know, it wasn't, well, you know, people have a different perspective. Kids haven't played soccer in 3 weekends. We can't, you know, that was their perspective. Can't live like this forever, dictated by the smoke or whatever they decided. I couldn't sort of see that, wow, that's just a different perspective. And, you know, I can hang with that. We can try it. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I was in, you know, they're wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway and prove them right because everybody's going to get coughing and sick. And nobody did, of course, except me. Right? You know, then I was getting sunburned because I wasn't prepared. You know, I just drove off practically in my pajamas. literally, pretty much, for the day.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because of the smoke.
It was because of the story.
It was because of the story.
Yeah.
And how quickly I got into it. You know, how it lulled me, even through the I meditated. So I've been watching that a little bit, how the story can lull me even in practice. Because it uses the language and it seems so true. So anyway, so whether it had been the smoke, it happened to be the smoke yesterday, but I've been watching that true lulling happen. And it's a really, 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 I don't know if dangerous is the right word, but stuck. It creates really stuckness in me.
Yeah.
That kind of, as you were saying, you know, that content irrelevant unconsciousness.
It really is. So you've been watching the process of getting lulled into a story.
Yes, and
really
it feels like resistance. So eventually it takes me to, but not initially. You know how Sherry talks about, like, I remember I was on a retreat in Carmel once, and you're looking at the ocean. And then she said, you know, then you think about, oh, I was just with so-and-so at the ocean. Oh, wasn't it a wonderful trip? And then before you know it, you remember how you got in this big fight at the end of the trip and drove home not speaking to each other or whatever, you know. But any time you sort of indulge in that, oh, isn't this wonderful? Even if we go that far, isn't this lovely? We've left.
Yeah.
Because it's got some kind of, and so what's happened to me lately, I'm not sure, I didn't, I'm missing the lovely part, except for yesterday. I was thinking, isn't this lovely? That's the other thing. I was thinking, oh, I can get all this stuff done now.
Right? There you saw. Maybe you saw the opening of the story.
I did see that yesterday. I mean, oh, yeah, I saw that. I mean, I saw that part of it yesterday, part of the story. But really, for 2 weeks, somehow I've had that feeling that comes when the story fails you, you know, or fails me. Now the story is not lovely, and it's not, oh, yeah, well, then it'll be fine because we'll be together, we'll be a family, and we'll get all this done, and maybe we'll have ice cream. You know, that lovely story failed me because it wasn't real. It took me away from, and I think that happens, I got to look for it a little more. I miss it, is what's been happening. I miss that it's a story.
Yeah.
And then I feel the resistance and the resentment, really, the resistance, the you know, people aren't doing it, or life isn't doing it, or it can go to, I'm not doing it, but it's wrong, you know, it goes to something wrong.
And when you're lulled in with the, oh, this will be so nice to have some family time, that, you know, I'm because it sounds like you were aware that, at least sometime yesterday, that that was what kind of drew you in to the story.
Well, it may be right now when we're talking about it.
Okay, but anyway. And then you're seeing, and you're spending some time with that place, that resistance place, and you're seeing that, okay, this is maybe where you're coming to.
I don't think I came to, Rebecca, until I got home and had a shower, and I don't even know if I came to then, actually. I think I was just relieved, you know. I think I was still in the...
You're just seeing it now.
Yeah, I think that I felt trapped.
Yeah.
I felt pretty trapped, actually. I mean, I did pop out of it maybe around 4.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty, you know, I get stuck. I got stuck there. And really thinking there's no way out but to get home and get everybody showered and... I'll get showered. Okay, now is it? No, I still feel annoyed and irritable. And my smoke and my, you know, it's still that story of the thing that's causing me the problem is the externals.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, then I had a shower, but now I still have to get them fed and nobody's doing it right. You know, there's still the story. It's still being believing that my suffering is caused by. Which doesn't give me, to take it to what the first person was talking about, it doesn't give me any space to see what is really needed in the moment.
Yeah.
Because I think it's something other than stopping listening to this.
Well,
I think it's content.
And what's dropping in now, and I don't know, this is just throw this out there, is that all of that, what you're describing, is only a problem if you're wanting it to be different.
I did look at that. We had our facilitator call this morning, and I did look at that process. That whole thing was just fine. It was just what happened. It was just Susan being Susan and being, you know, a little, I don't know, just whatever. Yes, there is a lot of freedom in that. And I have been practicing with that, but I haven't been as skillful with it in the moment. I've been getting pretty stuck. And then stepping back and, you know, okay, my job's just to come back to here, and that's just part of the thing.
And right now, here is stuck.
Yes, I have been practicing with here is stuck, and that is helpful. It's with great kindness.
Yeah.
And when I was facing the wall, it was just so funny. I mean, I almost started laughing to watch because I am gone. And then I'm like, all right, this time, you know, I'm just going to see. We're just going to look from the breath, kind of like, and then... And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm missing it. Okay, come back. And there really isn't judgment. It's really kind of fun. But it is, I notice I am astounded by my ability lately to go get that duped.
Yes.
And yesterday, the probably wishing it was different was a big part of kind of what was causing that.
The suffering.
Yeah. So yes, but I it is helpful what you're pointing at, not wishing any of it was different. There is a part of me that wants to see so it doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. So we know who that is.
Yeah. It's true. And I have to, so I either have that part, or forget it, it's hopeless anyway, why even try anymore. So there's the two kind of sides of the duality. So there is I'm going to train as if my hair's on fire, my job is just to come back to the breath, go back to the basics.
Yeah.
Just kind of been what I've been. I added a meditation on my day, and I'm just come back, just the breath.
Just the breath. So that we can be kind to Susan.
Yeah.
I have an example of how losing presence can turn any content into an opportunity to suffer.
Oh, boy.
That's all to the content. Sherry and Ashwini went and had a couple of bookstore appearances recently, one at East West in Mountain View, but one at East West in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And we recorded them on the cell phone, recorded the event. And I have the great privilege of editing those recordings and getting ready to share with something. So, it's easy to lose sight of what a privilege that is. It becomes a burden. If I'm listening. And then, I see, well, I got talked into that. So then I'm at the computer and I'm doing the work. And somebody doesn't talk about it, or somebody coughs, whatever, something they shouldn't have coughed over. And it's just the, snarl, snarl spill. And and the recordings are, I think, about an hour and a half each. And I break them up into 2.5 to 3 minute segments. And there's no good place to break.
Yeah.
And it's just any little thing that they can find to make this, to pull presence away, it will do. And yes, for at least a little while I go with it. And it's constant. It never fits. And a big area that it gets me is, let's see, this is apartment I'm fuzzy about. So I'm sitting at the computer, and this takes quite a while to do. I mean, it's many hours. And I don't realize how, I don't know if I'm not present, I don't know if I'm just really focused. I don't know what's happening, but all of a sudden, the pain in my body triggers. Whoa. I need to get up.
Yeah, I've been losing 2 hours.
Yeah. And so in the rest of my body, I am doing a lot of work to address the pain in my body. I haven't really looked at this. I don't know if there's sabotage. I don't know what it is. It's such a familiar process from having done so much of this kind of work. Let me look at it for a second. I think the fact, yay for me, I think the fact that I am doing so much of the work is bringing me to that awareness faster and faster.
Uh-huh.
And just continuing the practice.
Yeah.
Sooner and sooner. Because in the early days, I would sit and stare at my computer and get lost in the judgment, blah, 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 and just be in such pain, hour after hour. And it's not happening now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now the pain is getting your attention much, much quicker. So this opportunity, this is an opportunity for you to do this great privilege of this work, watch all of how the voices are trying to make it into a chore, all that kind of stuff, and keep in your awareness the needs of the body. Whereas before, it sounds like that used to totally go away for hours and hours and hours on end.
I was aware I was hurting, but I just didn't want it.
Okay, so there was the awareness, but there was no willingness to.
I got to this time.
So now June's care, the body's care, that is really got a place at the table. It's getting attention now, whereas before it didn't.
So perhaps the next place to explore is, can either be focused on the work so that it meets someone's standard of being here with them, and enough body awareness that I don't have to be in pain before I'm triggered to take a break.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going.
The pain usually comes from losing awareness of posture. And I won't get into that. Could be your crouch.
Yeah.
And before you put the neck and shoulders and the arm, just.
So can you work? So there's the attention, right? There's the laser beam in the light room, right? The laser beam is on the work, but what's in your awareness is the posture, the body, the sensations, so that it can all be held. You're not the attention, you're the awareness.
Okay, that's a really, really good one.
I used to do that with driving, back when I drove like 2 hours a day, and I was having a lot of neck pain, and I would come to when my shoulders were raised up like this, and it was all tension, and I was tense like that. So my practice became similar to this. It was like I was focusing on the driving, but I was bringing awareness to my shoulders where I would catch when they first started raising like that. You know, so it was a fascinating practice to see where I would go, and it was always that I would leave, and that's when it would go into what you're calling on the computer crouch. I would call steering wheel crouch. You know, and it really is a very compassionate endeavor to bring awareness. So you're the awareness that's holding it all, focusing the attention on the work in this case, but not excluding the body, or anything else for that matter, in the awareness.
Yeah, and I'm aware of, I think it's in the first few pages of the key. First thing sure that I wrote. One of those things has been so profound in my life. It's that we hold the belief that if we're not tight and tense, we're not doing a good job. And that's just what that is.
Wow, that's all that is.
That's all it is.
It's just a belief that if we're not tight and tense, we're not doing a good job. We're not working hard. We're not mattering. We're not whatever they do. Wow, that's profound, isn't it? It's a profound thing.
Simple yet profound.
Yes. and profound to see.
We're not tight and tense, we're not doing a good job.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Okay. Yeah, I could relate to that. If we're not tight and tense, we're not doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And what I've been looking at this morning is, well, I'm really happy the Serenity Prayer came up. It is a beautiful prayer, and that one just keeps the courage. See, I forgot it now. the courage to change the things we can. I have been, what I've been looking at is what we've been talking this morning, habits. And in particular, habits, I think probably habits of turning to conditioned mind. Finding the compassion for the being that gets lost at times because if there are these beliefs that that if you just try hard enough, these things should just drop away, these habits and that somehow there's lacking of courage or willingness or something, that somehow that they should just be gone. That belief gives rise to suffering.
Let me see if I'm going to reflect some of that. So there's the habit of thoughts or whatever that cause suffering that leads us into this path. Then there's the belief that if you try hard enough, those should just drop away. If you just try hard enough. But what seems to be coming up, and tell me if this is what you're saying or if this is just my projection, that really it's the courage to change the things we can, which is that feels like it's what's being asked or required, the courage to change it, not just a trying that in this the belief feels like it's just sort of a kind of a cop-out belief. Oh, if you just try hard enough, it should fall away. And if that can keep your attention, then it detracts from the courage to actually change the things you need.
Maybe it's the courage to accept. it feels like it's the focus on the changing that is the stumbling block.
Focusing on the changing system.
That there's something that needs to be changed, and that it says something about me if I can't change it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So the changing sort of gets sort of perverted into meaning there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
It's not that I'll help you be any way you want to be kind of change. Right. It's you should change because there's something wrong.
Right. Like, this has got to change. Yeah. That sort of thing.
Yeah. And that's not that courage change.
It's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff that goes with that.
Yeah.
It's just seeing courage is to find the compassion no matter what. It's been my experience. That
there can be willingness. It could be like, ah, just, you know, really no matter what is, there's just some things that seem like no matter what you do, they just keep arising, you know. And what, I guess what I'm just thinking about that is, you know, okay. So that's what's happening. I'm going to be with you. I'm not going to abandon you. We'll walk through this as long as we need to walk through it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, it gets into this place of, well, next week, by next week, or by, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the eighth time.
By the eighth time. This week.
Then you should be
yeah.
there. The
yeah.
tenth. Okay.
Right.
Maybe the 50th. No. No.
Right.
No matter what.
No matter what. No matter what.
We're gonna walk through it. Even this.
Yeah.
And that's the place of real courage, isn't it?
Yeah. And the courage too, for me, I'm seeing too, is just to say what's true for me. I've also noticed that when things are going on like that, that are particularly challenging, there's not, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to share it in group. I don't want to say anything because, again, there's that, it goes, flips back to that belief, well, it shouldn't have gone, you know,
mm-hmm.
shouldn't have gone on for, should be done right now. And now, and I can see underneath it is this, I don't know why this, it just, it dies so hard that a truly spiritual person is just like, or some of that. It's just,
yeah, that is a belief.
It's just a, it's somebody that floats around on a cloud all the time, you know, and never has a challenge.
Yeah.
Or if there is one presented, they could just like, you know,
just
in nanoseconds,
yeah.
they can just rise above it and like,
yeah.
you know, and like, okay, I saw that, I don't have, you know, and it's
yeah.
just all, yeah.
I mean, and if this whole lifetime was about nothing but digging that belief out by its roots,
yeah.
wouldn't that be a
yeah.
miraculous lifetime?
Right.
That was all that was ever, you know, that what being a spiritual person looks like is everything. It looks like everything.
Right.
It looks like anguish.
Yeah.
It looks like frustration. It looks like peace and joy. It looks like hatred. It looks like everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm aware of the fact that actually that being a truly spiritual person is not about being right, getting it right, you know, and the people that I really admire are not doing that,
yeah.
you know, and not being perfect and not, you know, but boy, it's going down hard here.
Yeah, it's putting up a good fight.
It's putting up a good fight, you know. That, yeah, the only way through is to just be perfect and right, and you know.
So it would kind of make sense that pain would be what keeps coming up because that is what's going to meet that false belief head on, isn't it? Because, you know, in other words, if you were just cruising
mm-hmm.
along,
mm-hmm.
then this belief would never be
yeah.
questioned.
It's true. It's true. It's those. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, if it's comfortable, I'm not looking, you know.
Why would you?
Yeah. There's just no.
And
yeah.
yet when they clash, then that, as you pointed out, that's the time, that's the opportunity. That's your opportunity to be.
That's the place that's where the treasure is. That's where it arises. You know, that really is where the treasure is. That's where, that's the place of thank you.
Yeah.
you know, it may not feel like a thank you at the moment, but as we sit here, I can see.
gateway for me. All those places.
Yeah, you can see it. I project because it's who you are.
I had a kind of a big workshop last week. Life presented it to me, and not the only one in the song that I had the same workshop presented recently. I got a summons to report for federal court jury consideration in Fresno, California.
I have been hearing a lot of those lately.
You know, it's like 3 hours, hundreds of miles away, and just right off the bat, I'm just like, this is crazy, but, you know, I called and I said, no, this is how it works.
We really do mean you.
Yeah, we really do mean you, and you have to be there. So I went there, and so what always occurs to me, I've never been called to the federal court before, but even for local, what occurs to me is, I know as a citizen in a democracy, that's part of our responsibility is to show up and participate in the supposed carriage of justice. And the other side of that duality is, I don't feel like I can participate in it because I don't believe that it's really set up dualistically, you know, there's right, there's wrong, there's if you're wrong, if you've done something, you have to be punished, and in a very mean and angry system, and it's just, I can't really get behind it. So that's where I went, down the road with my old two duallys sitting there with me. And so, so we go in this jury gathering place, and they show us this movie. Video movie about art. The two Supreme Court justices were on a movie talking about the privilege of doing jury duty and the duty of doing jury duty, and you know, getting everybody pumped up to participate. And I'm just going, oh God, maybe it's going to be a trial where, you know, somebody's suing a business, and it would be kind of something I could do, you know, that wasn't like somebody's going to end up sitting in prison and all of that. So all that's going on. So then finally, you know, after about an hour of being in this jury room, we walk to the courtroom. And then we get there and these gigantic doors, these big wooden doors open for us to go into the courtroom. And I mean, it's such theater. It's just so made to be impressive. So everybody's sitting in there in that courtroom, just like the court was going on, only the jury seats were empty. So there's a table over here with a bunch of people, and then there's a table with the people had their backs to us as the door opened. Everybody turned, all the people in those seats turned, and they're looking at every single prospective juror as they walk in the room. It's sort of like, whoa, this is intense. So they call one by one people and fill those 12 seats where the jurors sit, and I was called to sit in that. I'm going, okay, now this is intense. I've never been called to sit in one of those places all the times before I was even excused. And so I'm thinking, well, surely they'll tell us what kind of trial it is before they start into the process of selection. But they didn't. They introduced the people at those tables, and the person, the lawyers on this side that were, I think the guy who was being tried was on that table. Then this table had two guys who were the ones who were, whatever, I forget the names, but they were two cops, and I thought, okay, I'm in trouble because it's human beings here, and just so, and then they started going through the procedure, you know, and they didn't even say who's accused of what or what's going on in this place. So this is all the content of it, the content of it, obviously. So they said, does anybody have hardship? And I thought, well, I think if I wait too long to say something about this, it's going to be too late. So I said, I don't have a hardship, but I have something that I think affects my ability to be a participant on the jury. So I went up to the front and told them. And the judge says, well, I'm just going to order you to put your beliefs aside and just look at the facts. And I was about ready to respond to that when both of the lawyers, they used some official term, but they both wanted the excuse. Uh-huh. They were smiling as I was explaining what I was trying to say was, you know, that it would be very difficult for me to be objective and to ever rule somebody to be guilty of something because we can't. So they got it. They wanted me to be excused. The judge was really furious. I think she thought I was just trying to get out of it or something. So anyway, I was excused and I left, but she said something to the whole crowd about how this is finally being excused for this one trial, and I had to go down to the jury room and, you know, kind of, she was putting me through the ropes. Uh-huh. And so as soon as I walked out of the courtroom, I had the experience of feeling guilty. Huh. Like I had done something wrong. So basically, what I had the opportunity to see in this kind of drama, this theater of justice thing, was that it was like a really dramatic external representation of the internal conditioned system that is set up to be such an authority,
yeah,
and to be so important. So, like the justice is going to be done in here.
Yeah.
And
so it was an external model of what happens internally within a place of conditioning.
Yeah.
That conditioning is the judge.
That's what I was seeing.
The whole system is set up to make the person feel guilty,
I did feel guilty.
But what
I was getting to see in going through all of the things that I had to go through in the external system, mm-hmm, it was just bringing up all the feelings, mm-hmm, of the person who is the subject of,
uh-huh,
you know, the one who gets all of that,
yeah,
was feeling that, you know, like, oh, maybe I could do it. Maybe I could do what they want me to do if it's not if it's this kind of case.
Oh, wow.
Maybe I could do it.
Yeah.
No, it's not that kind of case. I can't do it. And then I go up there, and the judge is really mean, and it was a woman.
Uh-huh.
She was the meanest one, and all the lawyers were men, and that sort of played with my, uh-huh, prejudices. And so I just really got to look, and when I, you know, it was just really interesting to see how that was, how the things in our society are modeled after the internal.
Yeah. It's not every day you get to see such a clear mirror,
mm-hmm,
of the conditioned process writ large on you know, society, or our projection of it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, we gotta own that.
Yeah.
That everything there was a projection.
Absolutely. When I got home, I had this great big black book bound with a real bound, where I have drawn pictures of myself, personalities.
Uh-huh.
And I have a judge.
Uh-huh.
The judge is in robes in my picture,
uh-huh,
holding a gavel. I made it perfect.
It was her.
Yeah. And I have two lawyers who, one of them's name is Justin Fye.
and he's my defense lawyer. He always justifies everything I do in there in the courtroom. And then the other lawyer's name is Case Builder. So that's the one that builds the case against the human, and they go at it, and then the judge makes the final ruling. And I thought, wow, you know, no wonder this felt so personal. Pictures of the thing.
Wow, that is really a great workshop.
Yeah, and so when I went out and I felt guilty, I realized, you know what, I was taking the whole thing fairly seriously in terms of being responsible to how I could actually be fair, you know. And it was not easy to go up there and say, you know, put my hand up. Yeah. They handed me a microphone. I had to say over, speak on a microphone. And I thought, I was being honest that I would not be able to do what they were actually asking me to do, and it would have not been fair to either of the people or the whole system. So anyway, it was, and I could just, there's so much was going on in my body in that room, because I could just feel all of these external things were all things that I have been subjected to internally for a long time.
Yeah, getting to see that, what's going on internally as you're living it externally, it's just fascinating.
It really was.